For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The views and opinions expressed in the Golden Boot Podcast are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the Golden Boot Podcast as a whole.
Y'all ready to get rolling? Quiet on the set. Welcome back to another, another hot episode of Golden Boot. It's your boy Poopy. I got my man Aunt Petty Murphy in the building. What's weird with you? What's good with you, my boy?
What's happening with you, dog?
Man, it's been a day.
It's been a week.
Yeah, that it has.
Definitely.
You know, it's always an adventure when I travel. I tell you what, Dulles Airport, the United States capital, step your game up. The airport is trash. I'd say it's trash. It's terrible. It's not an indication of anything about the people of the city of D.C., but this is everything about infrastructure. That thing is trash. Also, I want to say, if you got small kids, please don't get on a 5-hour flight. Please. Y'all killing me. I can't even sleep on the flight. I watch some good stuff, man. I end up, dog, I'm telling you know you stressed out from hearing babies cry when you think Oppenheimer is a good choice in a movie. You know what? Maybe bombing the world ain't that bad.
Stop it, bro.
I was sitting there watching Oppenheimer. I was like, this is interesting. I almost watched the Barbie movie.
It don't get that bad.
It was getting that bad. I don't know what this is on my eye. I watched Lil Rel comedy special. I ain't gonna say he bombed. Keeping the theme with Oppenheimer. It was pretty good. Wouldn't have been my first choice. But hey, babies was crying. I needed something to drown out the noise. But man, we got a good one tonight, man. We got champion, another champion in the building.
Yes, championship. Sir.
Ain't on here, but finally get a series win. LSU baseball.
I say we don't talk about it because we didn't talk about it last week and then that turned around and won.
We talked about it a little bit, but it wasn't much. We just said, hey, They're there. So we ain't gonna talk about it.
Just keep that good juju going with him.
Yeah, yeah. What else we got? Man, we talk some draft, man. The draft this week.
We get to talk. It's finally here.
Yeah, we get to talk to a draft expert, the czar of the playbook himself. Man, I'm looking forward to it, man. But man, y'all know what we got to do. Oh, we talk a little bit NBA playoffs. I'm gonna talk about my squad a little bit. I had high hopes for a minute, and now it's like, and then I'm gonna be honest with you, he ain't here tonight. He started talking, and I was like, oh hell, here we go. I already knew what was coming after that. I knew it was coming. I blame him for it. I do. See, there we go. Yep, yep. They might not make 6 points for next game. All right, here we go. Give a shout out to our sponsor over at BetOnline. BetOnline.ag. We'll be back in 1 minute.
BetOnline.ag is your number one source for all your sports information, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds, lines, and player injury reports for this year's NBA and NHL playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters. This season, we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. We have everything from NBA, NFL, MLB, and NHL to golf, tennis, UFC, and boxing. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games that you can play right from your home. Head on over to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use the promo code BLEAV to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Hey, we are back. Man, let's go ahead and jump into it, man. Congratulations to the ladies of the LSU gymnastics team. Finally getting over that hump, winning the first national championship for LSU gymnastics. For LSU gymnastics. Man, thoughts, initial thoughts.
Well, it's been a long time coming. They finally got over that hump. And I think it's kind of fitting that they kind of did it by avoiding Oklahoma in a sense. You know, Oklahoma didn't make it to the final, so it's kind of fitting that everybody thought they were going to have to beat. Didn't even make it there. So it was almost like they went into the finals with, like last year, LSU women basketball team didn't have to play South Carolina to win it all. It was like the Big Bad Wolf wasn't even there for you to have to knock down. So I think that it was kind of cool that they got to win it without having to go through Oklahoma. It would have made it that much more sweeter to beat Oklahoma, but it kind of, the stars kind of aligned for them in a sense. But I mean, I'm just proud of them girls, Aaliyah, Haley, Kaya, all of them. They deserve it, man. Especially Haley for her career was, what it's been at LSU. You know, for her to go out like that is just kind of fitting.
Yeah, I loved the season as a whole. Dylan got into team gymnastics. I didn't actually see all of yesterday. I've seen the clips and stuff. Dylan actually hit me. Well, I told him, say, hey, they did it, the women's gymnastics. And he was like, let's go. He was jumping up and down and stuff, excited. So I was happy about that. I thought you talk about things that are fitting. I thought it was fitting that they didn't even start celebrating until DD Bro got on stage. I thought that was a remarkable, not just, you know what I'm saying, respect, you know, sign of respect, you know what I'm saying, salute to them. I mean, to her and her efforts, getting that team, building that team up to what they are. But I thought it was excellent, like I said, you know, for them to get there. So shout out to Aaliyah. The Beam has been a kryptonite for LSU all year, and for them to have to win it there.
Yeah.
That was special. That was remarkable. Like you said, Haley, she won all around too.
Yeah.
All around championship. So congratulations to her. It's like man, it's been big, man. LSU women been leading the way. They've been leading the way, man. And it's funny. I talked to our good man. Shout out to BJ Jones. I talked to him earlier, and we were just talking randomly. I was talking about, you know, asking about his daughter and stuff, and he was talking about, you know, different sports and how she's been doing. And I was just and I literally told him, I said, man, it's funny because like women's sports is heating up so much, and people are starting to pay more attention. And I love it, man. I love what I'm seeing, you know, saying women's, you know, college basketball, softball, gymnastics. I've seen a lot more people engaged and stuff. And it's been dope, man, this year.
Yeah, just hopefully we can see that trend become a norm, you know, instead of it being an outlier, that's what they're getting. It could be kind of the normal thing for women's sports to receive the same level of support they've been receiving lately.
Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and announce it here. Y'all be ready because we're going to be talking about a lot of WNBA over at the Golden Boot this summer. So, but yeah, man. But, man, again, congratulations to the ladies. But we, like we said at the top of the show, we got a draft.
Yeah.
We got a draft coming up this week.
About time. Finally here.
No. We got a special guest. We had to bring him back. I still ain't edit the graphic and put it on there, but y'all know who it is. The czar of the playbook himself, Mr. Emory Hunt, joins us again so we can talk about this NFL draft. Thanks for joining us again, Emory. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate y'all bringing me on.
I apologize for the time mix up and stuff. Listen, I said at the top of the hour, I blame Dulles Airport. I'm gonna continue to blame them. Yeah, it's not indicative of the people of DC, but that airport, if that don't make you think infrastructure is important, that airport do. But how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, man. Always a pleasure.
All right. I don't want to keep you long. But I want to talk about the draft. We got the draft coming up this week. We know the big names that are there. You've got, you know, saying quarterback heavy, wide receiver heavy. Not many running backs are being talked about. Nobody's ever going to talk about the offensive linemen. We know they're important. So far, what do you think about this crop of guys that we have to, you know, that we're going to see being picked so far this year?
Listen, I go deep with all the different positions, you know, grading over 900 this year in my draft guide at footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. So for me, it's always a deep class. It's just about where you see the difference in, you know, top end talent. So obviously you talked about receiver, tackle, I feel like are very, you know, deep in terms of the top end talent, but also cornerback is really, really deep in that sense. But across the board, you see really good talent, you know, at all positions. I do feel like the reason why is, you know, guys are staying longer. They're playing longer. They're getting more time on task. They're getting more reps in certain roles. Like at certain schools, you're seeing, you know, offensive linemen go from left tackle as a freshman all the way across to right tackle as a senior, and they play guard, they play center. You know what I'm saying? So I think we're seeing guys that I feel like are more than apt to come in and play right away and help you out.
Yeah, one thing I like about you, Emory, is you don't always kind of go with the consensus picks on who the top players are. I know last year one of the guys that you were kind of high on at running back, a lot of people necessarily weren't high on, Keaton Mitchell from East Carolina, who came out before he got hurt, obviously had a great year with the Ravens. Who are some of the guys that may not be getting love from all the national, you know, big name media outlets, but you're kind of high on this year?
You know, I feel like people are forgetting how good Jordan Travis is at quarterback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think people feel, for whatever reason, feel like his legs got amputated. Like now he just broke his leg. Yeah. He's fine, yeah. You know, and because here's the thing. When you go back and watch him as a freshman early in his career, he wasn't consistent at all, to the point we just thought he's just an athlete playing quarterback, to where we saw him last year. You're like, man, they can't win without this dude at quarterback. And had he stayed healthy, he would have gotten the ability to obviously get Florida State in the playoffs. they probably would have won a game, you know. And also, to be honest, he could have had that situation for him that happened for C.J. Stroud, where he had such a great performance in the playoffs that people remembered how good he was.
Yeah.
You know, because remember at the time they were talking about C.J. Stroud down-talking him. He goes out, balls out against Georgia, and people's like, oh, wow, I didn't know he'd had this in his bag. I feel like Travis would have done the same thing. He would have went to the Shrine Bowl and played all week. He would have had a great combine, being able to work out, and people would have been talking about him as a potential guy that could go in the first round. So now, because of the injury, because he didn't participate in certain things, he's going to be on a day three guy that somebody's going to get themselves a new Russell Wilson, put it that way, in terms of a guy that was drafted on day three. They're bringing him in with the expectation of being a backup, and he outperforms the starter on the roster, obviously depending on what situation he goes to. But I feel like Travis is the one that no one is talking about outside of the entire class.
Emery, you mentioned earlier about players staying longer and stuff. We know with COVID, a lot of guys got an extra year. Some got extra two, three, you know, with different type situations. Has that in effect hurt? Because I know a lot of times on day two and day three, we see some of those FCS or smaller group of five guys get picked up who were, you know, saying just as talented but just didn't have opportunity at a big name school. Are we seeing those guys hurt more by those, I guess, super COVID guys?
You know, what's funny is the fact that all the so-called FCS guys are now FBS guys because they've transferred up. So we've seen mass exodus of – so if you ball out, let's say, at Nichols, right, Tulane will come snatch you up. You know, if you ball out at Grambling, LSU will come grab you. So now we're not seeing – and I hate that it's become this way. We're not seeing a lot of the true FCS guys come straight out of the FCS into the draft. They're jumping into the portal, and they're getting their FBS opportunity. Credit to them because they're, you know, they're getting paid, and it's a great opportunity for them. But what also was happening, and they don't understand this part until they're on the other side of it, the best part about playing in the FCS or D2 is being a big fish in a small pond. The worst part about going from the FCS to the FBS is being a fish in the pond, because now if you were the top dog at the FCS level and you go to UAB and, you know, you are just second string, and it's like, well, we knew that answers our question. Well, he couldn't cut it at UAB. They're not going to draft him. Or if you go to a power five school, let's say you go to Virginia, you go out there and you play, you start, but then you get benched. Now it's like, well, the answer to that question, he probably should have, you know, he was an FCS talent. So he's definitely, if he got benched at Virginia, he's not NFL caliber. So, you know, exposure could lead to you getting exposed, you know? So sometimes it's best being a big fish in a small pond. Now we've seen the good part of that, where a guy like Jarrett Verse goes from UAlbany to Florida State, balls out, comes back, and balls out again. So, you know, so we've seen both sides, but I'm speaking directly to the small school talent when I'm saying this. Like, understand where you are, be where your feet are. Sometimes it's best to be the big fish in the small pond, because you're going to, at the FBS level, they're going to always, recruit over you. You know, yeah, we got a five-star running back. We need another one. You know what I'm saying? So it don't matter who you are at an FBS, especially the Power Five program. They have no problem stockpiling the room with elite level talent. So the competition is different. You mentally, you have to be ready for that. And a lot of times, if you're the big dog already on campus, just stay where you are.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen the draft process kind of boost people's stock, whether it be the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, the HBCU Legacy Bowl, whatever the case may be. This year, one of those guys was Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, and we've kind of seen his stock just continually rising, and now he's a first-round pick on a lot of people's boards. Is there another guy like him who might have been, you know, late first, early second-round pick, who kind of had his stock continually rise through the process?
Well, I would say it's tough to gauge who's gonna go in what round outside of, you know, the top three picks, right? So but I will say this, like going to the different All-Star games and seeing guys kind of, you know, make their way through, and you're like, all right, this dude actually can play, and this dude actually got some talent. And you've seen him get better over the course of the week or over the course of, you know, two All-Star games. And I've seen two receivers do this. David White Jr. out of Western Carolina and Joshua Cephas of UTSA. Even Tejon Palmer out of UAB. All three guys were at the Hula Bowl, had fantastic weeks. All three guys got called up to the East-West Shrine Bowl and continue to have really good weeks. So if you were able to stand out with an uptick in athleticism, uptick in talent, competition, that says a lot about, you know, your game. And I know the NFL definitely pays attention to that. We saw a guy last year. I was at the College Gridiron Showcase, and you know, this is the first All-Star game in January. It's the first week of January, and I'm like, wow, this dude, Colton Dowell, is killing these dudes out here. And he goes throughout the process, and he ends up getting drafted on day three by the Tennessee Titans in the seventh round, and because they were at that All-Star game. And so we've seen guys, you know, kind of have great All-Star game performances, even if it's at a lower school, and have them really help and enhance their chances. And I do feel like that's what we've seen with those receivers that I just mentioned.
Yeah. Now, last year when we talked with you, we kind of talked more on the HBCU side. So I want to go there for a minute. Guys like Mikey Vicker, Jordan Toles, Dinkwa, even despite the injury, Davis Richard. What are we looking like numbers? Because I got a feeling. What are we looking like numbers wise, or what do you feel like numbers wise? HBCU guys that may get a either get their name called in the draft or end up in a in the training camp.
I think we'll probably see at least 12 end up in a training camp getting drafted. I'm probably going to lean toward two. Willie Drew of Virginia State might be one of them, because he got better as the week went on at the Senior Bowl and had a really good combine. And I feel like along the offensive line, we may get a surprise. We may see back-to-back dudes from Virginia State get drafted. We may see Matthew Foster, the tackle out of Virginia State, get drafted, who had a really good HBCU Legacy Bowl, long arms, very good athleticism, checks all those boxes, height, weight, speed. But if, you know, and that's the if, but I know for sure if I had to put money on it, I would probably say one would be Willie Drew of Virginia State, because he has gone through all the different, you know, he has gone to the Senior Bowl, which already puts you in a different mindset or you know, of the NFL scouts, and he went to the combine and ran and tested well. So I think that's the one guy. It's tough because you guys touched on it earlier, where you have so many Power Five guys, so many FBS guys, that it filters out, is going to, you know, filter out a lot of the small school talent to where you really have to be a super standout. And I feel like that's why we don't see many get drafted in this year's class. Maybe next year we may see one. I know the kid from Morgan State is going to be a good one, Elijah Williams, a defensive lineman. But this year, maybe one probably will hear his name called, but we should see at least 12 sign undrafted rookie free agent contracts.
A lot of this draft process, we hear the term overanalyze, or, you know, paralysis by analysis and things like that. Is that the case that's happening with Marvin Harrison Jr., with people saying he's not the best receiver in this class? Or do you really think that Malik Nabers or somebody like that is a better prospect?
Listen, there, you could make the case for Malik Nabers. You could make the case for Aroma Dunze. And a lot of times it's not even by the technical eye. What happens to your point about overanalysis, on the other side of it, we get a lot of times people get married by that early preseason mock that comes out, or that too early mock draft. So we'll see a mock draft come out probably Sunday or Monday. Not this week, but Monday after the draft. We'll see a mock draft come out way too early, 2025 mock draft. And they'll have names on it, 32 names on it. Folks will get married to those 32 names and let that carry themselves out throughout the entire season. They won't move off those names. And I feel like we've been hearing about Marvin Harrison for a while, to where people even now feel like it's wrong to question whether or not other guys are better. When your eyes are telling you, man, every time I see Neighbors, he's putting the ball in the end zone. Like, man, I can't not be amazed by the stuff I'm seeing from Rome Odunze. And am I seeing Marvin Harrison ball out like Neighbors and Odunze? Or am I reluctant to say that those other guys are outperforming him? Because I've heard so much about Marvin Harrison that I'm just locked into that. You can't be better than somebody that we've been talking about for a year and a half. So I think that goes on, because a lot of times, just not even from a film study perspective, because your eyes never lead you wrong. If you're just watching a game, how many times somebody like Malik Neighbors or Rome Odunze just leave you going, wow? You know, so, and you don't see a lot of those. You see good plays and some wild plays from Harrison, but not to the point where you're watching the game. You just like, man, like you just kind of, you almost kind of forcing yourself to see the wow. But with Neighbors, you just like, man, this dude nice, you know, and that a lot of times your eyes are telling you how you should feel. So even though I think Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Malik Neighbors, A.D. Mitchell, Jermaine Burton, Keon Coleman are elite talents. It's okay to have this group. I feel like it's okay to have a different number one, because I feel like it's more like the 2014 class, where you had a bunch of good receivers. And I think this one is more along. It's not 1996, but it's definitely 2014, in my opinion.
I mentioned earlier about not many running backs. It feels like the NFL's, I guess, devaluing of the running back position has kind of led to like coming up, especially coming up into this draft class. I'm looking now, I can't even name a running back coming out that I would even consider first round. Is that just more of like the narrative being pushed, or is it just kind of like this running back class is not necessarily that they're not good, but they're just not as elite as we've seen in the past?
I think it's more along the lines of the latter, where last year we're talking about Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson. You're talking about some of these top tier talents. There's good talent in this draft at running back, guys that could even be starters. But in terms of having all the pieces together to really make them a first round pick, that's tough to see. And so I feel like we're seeing more second and third round backs in this class. Now, here's the thing. This is the NFL will, you know, it loves to have self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, they'll push the devaluing of the running back to where they don't draft it in the first round. And then they're like, well, see, you know, you don't have to take them in the first round. They're still good. Doesn't mean that dude wasn't the first round back. And, you know, we don't see them. What they need to do is start pushing the narrative of devaluing the quarterback position, because some of these dudes shouldn't go in round one, you know, yet they constantly force, you know, dudes that are overrated to go in round one and say, oh, you need a quarterback. Like, no, you don't. You just need a good team and a quarterback that's, you know, decent. Yes, a good quarterback can help push you over the top and elevate you, but we've seen San Francisco with an elite roster get to the Super Bowl with a quarterback that's just basically doing his job, right?
Right.
So, I feel like if you're looking at the and what also has happened with the running back position, because we're not seeing a situation where guys are being developed in the old school way, how, you know, it was the one dude behind the quarterback, so you had to really use your vision. It took vision, it took footwork, and now you're playing on side the quarterback, you're running a lot of zone. Holes are kind of a little bit more open than they were back when you had to really pick and find a way to go. And so they're not developing that. That's why when we saw Bijan or we saw Gibbs, like, okay, this dude got it. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the difference between the backs this time around as opposed to the backs 20 years ago. And I think that's the difference.
You talked about the overvaluing of the quarterback position, and I think a lot of that has to do with the way the contracts are set up. If you draft him in the first round, you get that extra fifth year on his contract to kind of give him another year to see what you got with him. But to your point about teams drafting too many quarterbacks in the first round, do you think we'll see more than four go this year in the first round?
I think so. I think so, because there's you look at teams that need quarterbacks: Chicago, Washington, New England, the Giants,
Denver,
the Raiders,
Minnesota. You know,
Minnesota. That's what, six?
Six, seven, yeah. So,
you know, and it's just about, okay, do we take – the Giants in a tougher spot because they're at six, so it's, you're not going to reach for someone at six.
Yeah.
Do you trade back in to the bottom part of the first round to get one? If you're in Minnesota, you've made all this move, all these moves, you kind of like, we got to take one, you know? Atlanta would have been in that same boat too if they hadn't paid Kirk Cousins all that money to coming off of an injury to not lead them to the playoffs, you know? Like, so I just, but that's part of the overvaluing of teams do.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt, in fact, that whole division, outside of the young second year player Bryce Young, overvaluing the position. We saw the Browns do it with Mayfield. We saw the Saints do it with Carr. They didn't ran off their best quarterback off the roster.
And thank you.
Kirk Cousins with Atlanta. You know, so it happens. You know what I'm saying? I can see five going, maybe six going in round one.
That's crazy.
It's funny because every time both of y'all said overvaluing the quarterback, JJ McCarthy's face just popped in my head several times. And I probably shouldn't call him out like that, but it happened. The question about what do you do at, you know, if you're the Bears, you know, I think it's a foregone conclusion. They're going Caleb Williams. But then you've got Washington at two, and I've been hearing a lot of rumors of, you know, maybe we should take Drake May, maybe we should take Jaden Daniels. But I've heard a lot more of that steam behind Drake May. Is that a case of what Ant mentioned earlier, the over-analysis, the overthinking, or is that just kind of a trying to drum up something more for draft day to get people interested?
Well, it could be both. You know, there could be some legitimate people in the building that would rather Drake May over Jaden Daniels. Football is not that complicated. It's not that hard. If you sit somebody that's not really a football fan, hadn't really watched football, just kind of like, you know, passerby, like how everybody did with women's college basketball, but they became adamant about it, you know what I'm saying? Like, were they fighting online about it?
Yeah.
You know, and you just pass them, like, let's say Caitlin Clark's film, and you just like, oh, wow, like all her shots go in. That's kind of what I want on my team, right? You know, right. I don't care about the you know, well, she can't do this or she can't do that. I mean, every time I look up, the shots go in from further and further away from the basket, right? And so you put someone that has the same type of passerby attitude about football and put on Jaden Daniels tape and then put on Drake May's tape. It would be comical for people to be like, yeah, I'd rather Drake May. Nothing about that dude's game compares to what Jaden Daniels does with the football in his hands. And it's not knocking Drake May. It's just saying, like, sometimes it's just obvious that the better player is the better player. Like, you know, I bring this up every year because people always love to try, you know, how people love to rewrite and forget history. But in 2018, when the Browns had the first and fourth pick of the draft, I was like, I will take Saquon Barkley number one because I know the two teams behind me will take the wrong quarterbacks. Therefore, I can get my quarterback one at pick number four, and that's Lamar Jackson. Everybody laughed at me. Lamar goes 32nd, and we're talking, what, two MVPs later, right? Sometimes football is just not that complicated. You watch Lamar Jackson play, yeah, he's nice, period. Like, there's no nuance involved. There's, yeah, he's doing stuff against dudes that's going to be playing in the league, and he's doing it consistently. And so Jaden Daniels is the same way.
Yeah. I think a lot of times people try to be too smart, and they try to nitpick, and they try to, well, he had all these NFL receivers. He's going to have NFL receivers whenever he gets drafted. So what's the difference? But to your point, I think Washington does go with Jaden Daniels at number two. And New England needs a quarterback, so Drake May at three. I think the draft really starts with the Chargers and Arizona at number four against Marvin Harrison. The Chargers at number five, I think, is where the draft really starts. They don't really need a quarterback, but they could go Joe All offensive line. They could go receiver Malik Neighbors or someone like that. How valuable is that position for the Chargers, where you have the whole draft pretty much in your hands, and you are the linchpin of the draft? Like, do GMs value being in that position, or do they value knowing what they want and we need a tackle, let's go get a tackle?
I'm going to call John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh's bluff. Like, you said all this about J.J. McCarthy, I dare you to take him, right? You said it sounds like you should take him at five. You know what I'm saying? All this stuff you said about him being the best quarterback in the draft and all this, and you need a quarterback to win, he's a great leader, take him at five, I dare you, right? Otherwise, if you don't, you BSing, and that's just going to tank his stock. But in all seriousness, to answer your question, I do feel like, yes, you want to have value with the pick. That's why if I was Chicago, I wouldn't have traded Justin Fields. I would have held on to the first overall pick, because that pick, I would have gotten King's ransom for that pick just to move down two spots or whatnot with Washington or, you know, New England, and picked up and then a crazy haul, right? And just added two elite talents and continue to build around Justin Fields. So, yeah, when you have a pick that people will deem valuable, or like you said, where the draft starts at pick five, I think that's, you know, a good place to be if you're a GM, because they could take a tackle, they could take, you know, a corner, they could take a receiver, you know, they could trade down with Minnesota. We know Minnesota has two first-round picks. So I think the Chargers are sitting in the catbird seat in terms of value.
Well, Emmerich, listen, I appreciate you so much for coming on, giving us your time and your expertise. Please tell everyone where they can find your all your analysis, all your information. There you go. Seat shores.
Go to footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. Pick up our 2024 draft guide. Has over 900 individual scouting reports, the largest draft guide that you will find out there. And if you've purchased the draft guide since 2020, right now you'd be sitting on over 4,300 individual scout reports. So you have a pretty good gauge on the entire NFL, UFL, you know, CFL. You have a pretty good handle on who these players are and what they can do and how they can help your football team. So it's a PDF file, full color, footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. And for the draft, you can see me on CBS Sports HQ. I'll be on day two and day three coverage. So keep it locked and follow me on social media at FBallGamePlan.
All right. Thank you again. I appreciate always slaying the trolls.
That boy cheats too, man. Don't go back and say he thought this player wasn't going to be good. He'll pull that draft guy back from 4 years ago and show you what he thought.
Yeah.
But you, man, gotta keep them honest, man. Like, people love to lie online, man.
Yes, they do.
They're lying about that.
But again,
brother,
appreciate thank you again. Man. Truly do appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Emory Hunt, the czar of the playbook.
Man, my boy be on CBS Sports, keeping it real with them boys, man.
Man, it's so funny to see him, like the way he slays the trolls and stuff. I try to get on. I'm gonna get on that level.
Like Sherm been doing,
yeah, like exactly. I even hate this topic. But speaking of Sherm, LSU football, we know that spring football is over. And the hits have come for the portal. Several players have decided to take their talents elsewhere. Fan favorites, you know, and everything. And I just want to say this. Not everybody who hits the portal when someone says, man, this will hurt, is not necessarily about, you know, what they've done on the field, but it's what they've brought to, you know, saying sometimes to the locker room, getting to meet those families. Also what we've seen them do in practice and stuff like that. Go ahead. I know you.
And another thing, like, I know everybody thinks that they know what this coaching staff is thinking, and they think that they got the scholarship numbers down. Well, we need to let this many people go. So, oh, he entered the transfer portal. He got processed. Not everybody who's transferring right now is getting told to leave. Some people just want to be in a different situation. They want another. They want a better opportunity to play. They want to go closer to home. They, you know, whatever the case may be. That the coach that brought them in isn't there anymore. Whatever the case is, not everybody who's transferring right now is getting processed. And whenever you think that you know what's going on, sometimes you're making a fool of yourself. So it's better to just be quiet, wish the kid good luck, you know, best of luck on his next destination, and keep it moving, other than saying things like, he wasn't going to play anyway, or he got processed and things like that. Y'all just making the situation worse.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say on this before we move on. So a lot of y'all are lucky that I have respect for parents, some of these student-athlete parents, and that my parents, you know what I'm saying, so I don't say something that'll, you know what I'm saying, make them clutch their pearls. But a lot of y'all, I will say this, y'all talk a lot of stuff on the internet and stuff. Just be careful who you're talking about, what you say, especially in this day and age, because as we've seen, the portal comes back around.
Uh-huh.
It comes back around. A player that may have decided to go elsewhere or didn't come here in the beginning may end up back in your class. Maybe end up back on your team.
Aaron Anderson.
So a lot of y'all might want to temper your, you know what I'm saying, your mind your manners. I guess that's the best way to put it. But man, we can move on from that. And speaking of moving on, the NBA has decided to move on from Jontay Porter as he receives a lifetime ban for betting on the team.
That man said they decided to move on. Yeah, they did. I don't even know, in an unceremonious way, I guess you would say, they just told that man, you ain't never welcome here again.
Yeah, that dude, listen to some of the bets he made. I know we joked about Kayshawn. This is terrible. Pete Rose and stuff. This is way worse.
Yeah, it's worse because he like the integrity of the game, you know what I mean? It was like, like you went out and you said, oh, bet on this, and then you went out there and basically just sold out to where people would hit their bets. That puts the integrity of the game in question, and that's the last thing you can have if you a league. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the harsh penalties. If you was gonna do that, at least make more than $20,000 off betting if you're going to ruin your career for that. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a bad week for the Porter family. Their older brother got sentenced for, like, a hit and run or something like that during the week. So, that family going through it right now. But it ain't Pope Michael over there just trying to hoop and this,
yeah,
all this chaos around him. But it's just a bad situation for you to leave, man. This, like Doc say, it's point shaving, bro. That's a point blank period. That's what it is. It's fixing the game to where you can make money off of it. And I hope it was worth it for. But kudos to the gaming sites, the apps, and the people for the sports books for finding this though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the irregularities of Jontay Porter's unders being the most winning bet that day and stuff like that. Like, it just goes to show you that you ain't gonna get away with stuff like that this day and age, because they watching everything.
Yeah. Ask you this: what's worse, this or Tim Donahue? Tim Donahue, the referee?
I think this worse. Because even with Tim Donahue, I think Jontae's is worse because he let other people in on it. You know what I'm saying?
Big facts.
Like I go tell the public, hey, go do this. You know what I mean? And then everybody eating off of it. Versus Tim Donahue just making money for him and his little the mob or whatever that hired him. So I think that Jontae's is worse because it was public information.
Yeah. All right. Sticking with the NBA, man. I know we had the play in tournament, but we've got the playoffs actually begin first, round.
Before we get to the playoffs,
yeah,
is the play in good or bad for the NBA?
I think it's good. I like it. Let me preface that. As a fan, I like it. It makes the games count a little bit more in the regular season, because you're not just playing to quote unquote get in. Now you're playing to be a top six, so you don't have to play that extra game or extra two games.
That's true. The only reason I asked is because you got Jimmy Butler hurt, you got Zion hurt, and both of those teams would have made the playoffs, and you would have had them anyway in the playoffs, and now you would have had them healthy. But now you got no Zion, no Jimmy Butler for the first round of the playoffs, and those teams would have got in anyway.
Would you?
Injuries happen. Who's the right? He got hurt the first game of the series or whatever. But I just think that it's one of them. It's one of them things that you're gonna take some bad that come with it. You know what I mean? So you just got to look at the good outweighs the bad, in the sense of you got meaningful basketball for a full month that down the stretch from teams like Golden State, Sacramento, who would have been out of it otherwise.
Yeah. Let me ask this. Would you rather get rid of the in-season tournament or the play-in?
The in-season tournament, because I don't think it has any point.
That's fair. Other than adding money and excitement
think there's really no point in it. At least, like you say, at least with the play in, it gives more meaningful games to the end of the regular season for more teams.
Mm-hmm. If you were to restructure, could you do something where the in season tournament adds something extra for you for like a playoff push or something? I can't think of a way to do it, but.
The only thing that you could do is to make it to where you avoid the play-in or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and you are automatically a top six seed. But then what happens if they just win the like the Lakers this year? They won the regular season, in-season tournament or whatever. And then they finished, what, ninth, eighth? You know what I'm saying?
Eighth.
So then they would have finished sixth, even though they would have really finished eighth. You see what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah. I get you. But let's talk about game one NBA playoffs, game ones of the NBA playoffs. I kept up with several yesterday. Of course, I watched the Lakers game later that evening, but it was games like I'm trying to pull it up now. It was games like the Knicks making that comeback because they were down big early. Knicks making their comeback to win. Cavaliers beating the Magic. Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards putting on a show against the Suns. Looking at Durant, telling Durant, so basically, I'm the future now.
That's his favorite player too. That's even better. You going at your favorite player ever like that.
Yeah. So. It's amazing what Michael Jordan kids have done in the NBA, looking at Jimmy Butler and Anthony.
Anthony was for sure.
Oh man, Ant-Man, that dude, the dog. Like as my man Doc says. So Edwin asked, you know, kind of go back, asked what was the purpose of the in-season tournament.
It was.
Yeah, I think they actually took the model basically from the WNBA. I guess to try to add some excitement to, you know, it's
the European soccer model. That's what they really.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, just trying to add some excitement. He asked about what I thought about the Lakers game against the Nuggets. He asked that earlier. I'm gonna be honest with you.
The altitude.
You think it was the altitude? I thought they came out great. It just felt like once the momentum was gone, it was a wrap.
I think y'all just got tired in that second half. Like, okay. Looked at the end toward the end of the game, LeBron just looked tired. AD had his hands on his knees. You know what I'm saying? Seemed like they just kind of got wore down and playing at the altitude after playing the play-in game. You know what I mean? Like, they ain't have the rest that Denver had. And plus, they're playing at the altitude. So I think that was just a factor.
Yeah. I saw somebody say online that Kobe would have nuked this team, and LeBron was, you know, saying LeBron is the reason they lost. I think people forget this is year 21 and he's 39.
I think people just like to talk.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I don't know. Do you now? Let me ask this, because I know a lot of people have said that this Lakers game is a sweep. I mean, Lakers series with the Nuggets is a sweep. You still feel that? Well, I don't know if you felt that way, or do you still feel that way? Or you think this?
I think they're gonna get one, but I mean, I don't think it's gonna be a 7-game series or nothing. No. They might get 6, but I don't see. And that ain't a knock to the Lakers or nothing like that. I think this is one team that the Lakers don't really match up well with. And I think Denver is really the best team in the West. So, I mean, no matter who would have faced off with Denver, I think Denver would have pretty much handled them pretty easily, whether that would have been New Orleans, Golden State, Sacramento, you know what I mean? No matter who it would have been, I think Denver would have took care of them pretty easily.
All right. Looking at today's slate of games, Bucks beat the Pacers, 109-94.
Damian Lillard beat the Pacers.
Clippers beat the Mavericks. I honestly didn't realize how the Mavericks record this year and how good they were. They were quiet
down the stretch. They was on fire, but today,
yeah,
not so much.
Yeah, they lost 109-97. Celtics took out the Heat. And of course, right now the Thunder and the Pels are playing.
This late ass game.
Yeah.
I'm gonna catch the score in the morning. Cause I ain't no way I'm staying up to watch this whole thing.
Yeah, man. Dude, no comment. Hey,
what the NBA be thinking, man? Like, it's a Sunday. You could have had these games started earlier than this, but
yeah. Man, so I know we talked about this. I know you missed it. I missed it because I didn't even know. But I went back and watched highlights. I went back and watched some of the analysis, been reading up on it. Ryan Garcia completely manhandled and humbled Devin Haney.
Yeah, I seen, but I don't know what happened, man.
I think everything that we've been saying about Haney, who we listen after the Lomachenko fight, me and you both had been saying Devin Haney he's not that good. I'm trying to rephrase.
There was some suspect
aspects in his boxing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
yeah. I talked with Josh earlier. Josh from HBCU Nightly. Joshua Sims Sr. Devin Haney has the soft of their peer group, because you know it's a group, you know, saying of like, you know, saying those guys who, you know, saying who've been, you know, saying battling out. I guess you can throw T.O. in there too. T.O., Devin Haney, Tank, Shakur, Ryan Davis. Ryan Garcia. Lomo is older than them. But that, like that base of that group, Devin Haney chin is the softest. Pause. No Diddy. But he literally, he, now I will say this, he got heart. He'll take that, you know, saying hit on the chin and he'll get back up and fight through, but he gets knocked down a lot. That dude sees the mat a lot.
Yeah. And then
you think it's daycare.
That
nap time.
That hook from Garcia just wore him out, man. It just wore him down, bro. And it ain't nothing personal with Haney
at all.
Even though him and his dad kind of get on my nerves sometimes with the way they talk, but oh my, Alvarado just made that boy touch the flow. But my bad. But I just knew it was coming. You know what I'm saying? You could just tell it was coming for Haney. It wasn't a matter of if, but when he was gonna get his ass beat. And I didn't necessarily think it was gonna be Garcia, but
that H&M hook and melatonin.
That hook had some melatonin in it. Because too many of them hook.
You gotta watch the Ha Ha Davis version. What's going on, big fella?
Boy was getting his ass whooped out there, man. It wasn't good. But yeah, I just knew it was coming though. I just didn't know who.
I felt like, I think I had seen, I didn't even see a lot of promotion for this fight, but I think I had seen a little bit. And I said to myself that Garcia will take him out. Now, fighting against anybody else in this group, I still think he goes down. Tank, not completely, is going to completely knock him out if they ever fight. Shakur is going to death by a thousand cuts. He's going to pick that boy apart and take him down. Again, this is nothing against Devin Haney. It's nothing. It reminds me of, he's a less annoying Adrian Broner. Adrian Broner had everything it took to be the next Floyd, but I think Adrian got a little too ahead of himself and talked a little bit too much. And
yeah, I still think Shakur the best.
I do too. I personally do too. Dude, I was talking to Rio earlier, and I was like, Shakur got a 4%, what is it called, land rate. As far as like other boxers, they only land in 4% of their punches that they throw.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Too different, bro.
That dude, that is wild. So, man, definitely, man. Looking forward to seeing what's next. Next fight. I didn't in this group. I don't know who Tank gonna tank on. I think Tank got a fight coming up soon. I don't know. I gotta look and check the schedule to see who fighting next. But yeah. Man, this last story is kind of a sad one. And ain't no kind of sad. It is very sad, man. RIP, rest in power to the Schwab, man. Howie Schwab, Stump the Schwab, famously known for his television show, where nobody could, you know what I'm saying, Stump the Schwab pretty much on ESPN. Howie Schwab, he had actually recently kind of made a little bit more of an appearance on Driving the Line with our good friend Alan Bell and the coach, Jonathan Coachman. Man, that dude knew sports. Especially college basketball. That dude was, he would pick against the grain. He knew sports. He knew everything. And sadly enough, you know, the world lost him. I think it was a couple days ago. But, you know, so our condolences to his family, to his, you know, co-workers and staff.
Yeah, man. I remember being a little kid watching Stump the Schwab trying to see if I could stump him with my little sports knowledge that I had at the time, though, man. That was one of the introductions to me loving sports the way I do, was that show. I used to watch it religiously, man, on ESPN Classic.
Big facts.
But man, that's one of the, when you talk about just sports historians, sports encyclopedias, That's the guy who always comes to mind for me, man. That dude knew everything about every sport. He could talk every sport with the best of them. He could remember the most obscure stats and the most obscure, you know, records and things of that nature from almost any sport. And he was very knowledgeable and didn't mind sharing his knowledge and was very articulate in sharing his knowledge with whether it was through Driving the Line or ESPN or wherever he was at the time. He was just a real icon in the game, man. And the sports world lost a big historian and a big part of what makes the sports world so great to me. So rest in peace to Howie and prayers to his family, condolences, and with Alan and Coach and everybody as well, man. And there'll never be another one like him, man.
Yeah. All right, man. That's all we got for tonight. That's all I got. Congratulations to LSU baseball team. Keep it rolling. That's all I'm gonna say on that. And you got anything else before we get ready to get up out here? Anybody else got anything in the chat?
I just want to say again, major congratulations to the LSU women's gymnastics team on finally getting over the hump and bringing back the school's first gymnastics national championship. Well deserved. Y'all earned it, and I hope this is the first of many for Coach Jay and that program. But big congratulations to all the girls and to the coaching staff on a huge accomplishment and another title for Sky Woodward, man.
Man. That, you know what? Before we get up out of here, I want to talk about Sky Woodward real quick. Because somebody was talking about, they said, man, he only needs two more titles to be the GOAT. And they said football and men's basketball. I said, wait, he already got men's. No, they said three more. They said football, men's basketball, and softball. I said, wait, he already got football. So softball, men's basketball. Men's basketball is kind of a tough one to get. But what about if he got one like beach volleyball?
Technically, he was the athletic director whenever football won. Mm-hmm. But he didn't make the hire.
Well, he didn't make the hire for Coach Jay. D.D. Bro retired before he got here, and Coach Jay was there.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just saying he's
been the athletic director. While that's, I give him credit for that. Yeah.
Danny said, "Great show. Time to go watch Willie Green tick me off with this player rotation."
Not tonight. Not doing it.
Listen, I know we're gonna get up out of here. We had the conversation last week about rap beefs and the best diss tracks, and we talked about Kendrick Lamar. Now that we know it was an AI, it was not Kendrick Lamar, and Drake has come out with his own AI. Paul Sub says, my bad. Paul Sub says, DD retired during the pandemic, Clark was elevated while Scott was AD. Okay, that's my bad. But now, do we look at this whole situation completely different?
That beef don't matter to me. Not after the Chris Brown diss. Chris Brown came through and showed everybody how to make a diss track.
That's true. He hurt my feelings. I was like, man, you went that was deep.
Man, hey, I don't know how Quavo come back after that. I don't, bro.
Quavo was looking at the when it was playing, he was looking at the radio like Doc Rivers be looking.
Like,
oh man.
It ain't looking good for him right now, my boy. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's get up out of here, man. We'll be back sometime next week. This week, no, we'll be back because Thursday got the draft. Yep. So we'll be back this week for the draft. Hold on, let me get somebody want to drop a diss track off of this beat. You know what I'm saying? Holla at us. You know what I'm saying? As long as y'all ain't dissing us, we good.
We'll be back.
Like that. We at.
This show was presented by betonline.ag.
Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe on Twitter at Golden Boot. On Instagram at Golden Boot. On YouTube at The Golden Boot Pod. On Facebook at The Golden Boot Pod.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.